rumors that she was not the true author of her new book. It's called The Bible. When substantial damages were awarded against her, the princess told waiting reporters, "It's a fair copy." A warm welcome now to highly respected satirist John Wells with this question. John, who found no solace at the solstice?
The solstice, I suppose, is a reference to the bearded weirdies, our friends the hippies. The police chased them round and round and round the country. They finally moved into the chamber of the House of Commons, where they mingled inconspicuously and effected their escape.
Right in every detail. This all refers to the annual sun-inspired convoy of dishevelled reprobates, better known as journalists, who follow the hapless hippies to their Stonehenge pop festival. A warm welcome now for Bill Tidy with this brain stretcher. Bill, can you tell us about the rising star who has to minister to the sick every time she picks up a duster?
The rising star?
Oh, it's not the unspeakable. Is it? Oh, I promise never to mention her name. It's the Right Honourable Edwina Poppadom. Poppadom. It's not a nice word.
There was a disgusting photograph in the picture this week of Mrs. Edwina Curry blowing into a corpse.
Where?
Well, I think at the top end.
Thank heavens for a moment, I thought you were going to say Uxbridge. You're quite right, Bill. It's all about Edwina Curry, the Conservative Party's answer to Chicken Vindaloo, who was recently made junior health minister despite claiming to be allergic to housework. It seems that the problem is breathing in household dust. Well, she keeps her mouth shut. It won't get in. And an opening question, too, for Punch's David Taylor, preceded by this.
Το παραθύρο μου στέλνουν ένα δύο και τρία και τέσσερα φίλια.
Oh, no.
Right.
No, it wasn't Edwina Curry. That was the Greek arts minister, Melina Mercouri, who's never on Sunday.
Melina Mercouri?
Edwina Mercouri, yes.
Yes, the Greek Edwina.
Get it?
Who we're told will carry on singing until she gets the Elgin marbles back. Give them. Well, what we want to know, David, is this. Who was sorry that she ever talked shop?
Yes, well, it must be, I suppose, the grocer's daughter herself.
Absolutely right.
And her ill-starred attempt to liberalise Sunday trading. It's a curious position at the moment. You can buy some things on Sundays. But not other. You can't, for example, buy a Bible, unless it's ghosted by Princess Michael. But you can't actually buy a Bible, but you can buy newspapers.
Could well be. Well answered.
On a Monday.
And that brings us to the end of the first round, and our new scorer, Viv, is about to hand me the score so far, which, amazingly, is for all. Well, thank you for clapping anyway. Well, nimbly we leap on to round two, and this time the Sunday Telegraph is putting its oar in.
Maurice Humphreys was a successful and much-loved Chicago gangster. Humphreys loved his family and was charming and likable. Even those he killed bore him no ill will.
A wonderful name for a gangster, isn't it? Maurice Humphreys. Anyway, thank you for that wonderful snippet, Pamela Van Dyke Price, all three of whom live in London, Southwest 7. It's time once again to wake Richard Ingrams from his slumbers. If you can cast your mind back as far as the spring, Richard, whose daily appeared a little off colour?
I like the Independent, by the way. I think it's tremendously dull. I like a paper to be dull myself. All this is an indication that I can't answer the question. Mr. Wells is making a funny miming. Is it Eddie's rotten? I didn't like Eddie's paper. I thought that was very poor. Very poor indeed.
Do you mind? I work for that.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's frightfully good.
Do you still work for it, Bill?
Well, I go through the motions.
Yes, I do, and I take exception.
Parts of it are excellent.
That's right. It is Eddie Shaw, who only recently departed from his own creation, the Today newspaper, which appeared in March in a blur of vivid colour. Readers who started making the recipe for vegetable pizza only discovered by reading the text that it was actually a picture of Lord Whitelaw. Even now, 9 months later, they're still waiting for the 3D specs to arrive. John Wells, back to you with a tongue twister. Whose mission went over the top over there after stopping over here?
Is this a reference to the little shopping spree in Libya? You realize that all the damage was caused by Gaddafi's air-to-air guided missiles that went astray and happened to destroy a few of their own hospitals.
How do you know that, Mr. President?
Well, you know these Middle Eastern guys can't operate machinery.
That's right.
Particularly not heavy machinery after taking night nurse. Anyway, I see in the paper today that Mrs. Christina Foyle says that one of the keenest shoppers for books at Foyle's is none other than Colonel Gaddafi. Apparently he has a mail order. He goes and gets lots of books. It's very interesting what books he reads.
He's very keen on Auburn War.
Not generally known that Auburn War is Colonel Gaddafi.
That would account for the similarity.
That's why he's away on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
That's enough.
Quite right, you were. It was the Americans who deposited their annual defence budget on Tripoli in Libya in the hope of hitting Kate Adey. However, the strike force had secretly been given the go-ahead to refuel in England en route, a move which led to strong criticism from the British left. But at least they brought back enough free glassware from the filling station to last the White House until the year 2001. We go back now to the artist as a young man, Bill Tidy. Here's some music for you, Bill.
There I was, a digging his hole, all in the ground, so big and sort of round it was, and there was I, digging it deep, it was flat at the bottom, and the side was...
Bill, who set their heart on their sleeve, or rather, under it?
I say it's the Channel Tunnel, being dug personally by Mrs. Thatcher. As long as she doesn't let her son dig it, because it'll probably end up in Indonesia. I'll say no more, because I shaved specially tonight. I don't think it was worth it.
Of course it was.
You'll grow
again during the course of the programme. It's about the British and the French governments who have set to work enthusiastically on the Channel Tunnel in the optimistic hope that they will meet in the middle. And now British tourists will be able to pop over for the day and pick up some mouton Rothschild 57, foie gras and escargot, while the lucky French are in for a pound of Spam fritters. Family pack of Maltesers from Maidstone. And it's us that are holding back. And back once more to David Taylor with a question concerning a noble art. Whose efforts on canvas were a frank disappointment?
Frank Keating.
There's a boxer called Frank, which is to do with canvas. Is that him? Mr. Something. It's called Bruno. Is that the capital of Yugoslavia? Something like that. Frank Bruno is a boxer who took on someone called Weathervane and lost.
The answer was Frank Bruno, the great white hope of British boxing. Who sadly failed in his attempt to become the first British heavyweight champion of the world since Hengist. He did everything his trainer told him, kept his head down, his hands up, his body straight. He didn't commit himself too much. Now all he has to do is remember to do it standing up. And to the end of round two, the score poised at the amazing score of 432 to Richard and John. While Bill David, a 92 for four.
After stoppages.
Well, there's no point at this time of year being serious about scoring, is there, Richard? Anyway, we proceed now to round three with news of a revolution in gardening techniques featured in the Lincolnshire Standard.
Pick your own top quality fresh fruit at Glebe Farm. Raspberries, black currants and ready frozen peas.
And Mrs. Mary Johnson provided us with that instance of the wonders of technology. And we move on now with Richard Ingrams. Richard, can you tell us about the bouncing check that contributed to the Commonwealth?
That's
a difficult one for you.
Very funny indeed, yes. You are referring to the bonnie Mr. Captain Maxwell.
quite right.
What took over the publicity? I mean, no, took over the job of financing the Commonwealth Games, and I think is yet to pay his bill. Although a certain strange Japanese person called Mr. Fuwata Scorcher appeared at the last minute and said that he was going to help. Did you see him on the television praying?
Yeah,
it was very, very amusing. But I think he was praying to be preserved from Captain Bob. But casting no aspersions on him, I think he's done an awful lot for this country. And I'm sorry you find that funny, because I don't at all. He's done a lot for the country. I can't think of anything at the moment, but there you are.
Quite right. It's all about Robert Maxwell.
Foreign bastard.
He added shyly. It was that wonderful person, Robert Maxwell, the world's greatest newspaper proprietor. He poured a lot of money into making the Commonwealth Games a great occasion. A host of important dignitaries were brought on to present the medals, like Robert Maxwell. Games made a large overall loss, but we all know where Mr. Maxwell can recoup the losses. That's enough balance, Ed. John Wells.
Moscow Gold.
We're going to draw on your extensive knowledge of pop music now and ask you to identify the person seemingly railing here against the excesses of the tabloid press. And the question is, John, which pop heroine made a dope of himself in 1986?
Well, it's not known generally that that is a private recording of a trio made up of Princess Margaret, the Queen, and the Queen Mother, who sing close harmony in the evenings. I expect it's to do with Boy Maxwell. Is he called Boy? Boy.
Boy.
Boy. Boy Gamma.
Oh, yeah.
No, Boy somebody anyway. Boy George, the well-known transvestite charmer. And when Boy Mountbatten went to Greece, he apparently had bricks thrown at him.
Plates.
No, bricks. Most of the Parthenon was thrown at him while he was there. But anyway, when he got back, he took solace in the drug. That was, loosely speaking, it was a story about Boy George getting addicted to night nurse.
Oh. It was Boy George, the Ian Botham of pop, who got involved with certain substances and ended up being followed by a permanent posse of pressmen. Boy George is now thinking of leaving the country forever. He might go to Ireland and form a new band with Boy Jingo and Boy Jesus. But sport now, and this one was perpetrated by Radio 4 News during the World Cup.
The quarter-final will be the first time England and Argentina have met in a major sporting event since the Falklands War in 18...
Bill Tidy, you're a good sport. Can you tell us who had a hand in a little argy-bargy?
I would say it was a small man by the name of Diego Maradona, which is Italian for night nurse. Who convinced the unsuspecting world and a referee who must have suffered from 1:30 vision that it was God's hand that had smacked the ball into the net. And we were cheated and robbed. I'm only glad he wasn't in the Argentine army, or we may not have done it in the Falklands.
All about world basketball champion Diego Maradona, the swine, who explained the dubious match-winning goal that knocked England out of the World Cup by saying that he was waving to his aunt at the time. And we return to David Taylor now with this question. Why was a glowing report received with red faces?
Glowing report. Is this Chernobyl glowing?
Yep.
Oh, good heavens, right.
Do you think we're safe?
Oh, well, it's hard to say. Boy George is the expert on that.
They attempted to plug it with Boy George.
I think they'd have done better to plug it with Robert Maxwell, actually.
You'll get no argument from that side of the aisle. Anyway, of course, it does refer to Chernobyl, the exploding nuclear reactor that made the word livestock a contradiction in terms. The resulting radioactive cloud over Europe provided Scottish farmers with herds of revolutionary new-style self-basting cattle. And left scientists with a headache of giving fallout an E number before we even started to eat it. Which brings us to the end of round three, and the score is still tied at 12-all. Tied, they should be bound and gagged.
Get Maradona, I say!
I will! Round four now. We don't often get a cutting from the Humber Bridge Country Park newsletter.
An increase in the number of people coming to the park to catch newts has occurred. Some of these are members of a protected species and should not be disturbed.
Yes, well, we're obliged to Catherine Longley of Hull for that. And appropriately, we move on to Richard Ingram's with a newt question, preceded by a little ditty, which was actually sung by the main participant in the story.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Richard, can you tell us about a withdrawal from the South Bank that was beyond our ken?
Is the well-known newt collector, Red Ken Livingstone, deceased? That was formerly in charge of London Town, and now is an humble Labour candidate. And he was deprived of his office, quite rightly.
Oh, dear, here he goes again.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It does refer to the last days of London, which was finally declared a GLC-free zone by the government with no visible ill effects. Gay disabled newts wept visibly in the streets as a tearful Ken Livingstone distributed the last barrow loads of £50 notes to grateful passers-by. Livingstone said that he had given up hope of returning to real political power. He's standing as a Labour MP instead. Time now for John Wells to cast his mind back and tell us who apparently weren't seeing eye to one.
Is it something to do with eye Richard's humiliating defeat in the courts?
No. It's a royal question.
Oh, eye to one. Oh, of course. It's to do with the fact that when our leader, head of the Commonwealth, supreme mind,
Wonderful person,
Margaret Thatcher, goes for her to rub knees with, or whatever it's called, exchange things, with Elizabeth Windsor, a housewife of several fixed addresses.
Oh, dear.
Apparently, according to one of the Sunday papers, in fact, Mr. Michael O'Shea, the well-known press, you know, the press man at the palace, Mr. Michael O'Shea, begorra. You can see him standing outside the palace any morning of the week asking whether you've got tuppence for a cup of tea. And he said, apparently, he was stupid enough to be lured by some hack into saying that there was a bit of frostiness between these two housewives.
We are, of course, referring to the apparent argument between the two most powerful women in the country, Her Most Gracious Majesty and Queen Elizabeth II. It seems that the two don't get on well when Mrs. Thatcher drops round for a nice meat tea every Thursday to tell the Queen which minister has resigned this week. You can tell she's coming because the flags are all at half-mast at Buckingham Palace. More skeletons in royal cupboards now, courtesy of Ian Pickup and the Western Daily Press.
The Dukedom of York is a title that carries no automatic lands or financial reward, unlike the Prince of Wales, who is provided with a substantial income by the Duchy of Cornwall.
I knew it. The man's living off immoral earnings down there. The final question now for Bill Tidy. Bill, who came up with a household name but wouldn't share the secret?
It was the most expensive advertising campaign since artificial legs were made free. I must say, it annoyed me so much that I won't look at the ads, and I have not bought any shares in British hot air balloons or whatever they are. It was about Sid, a mythical man who, had he been in Spain, would have been simply called El. It was a very expensive campaign, which I believe was first filmed in a village. When the villagers says, "What are you doing?" they said, "We're filming the gas commercials." And the villager says, "They won't give us gas." It's true, my dear. It was Sid. And did they ever find Sid?
He's on Radio 2 every morning. That's where he used to be found.
The thing was, we at the agency, you see, we wanted to find some warm, lovable, working-class character. We could be tremendously condescending to him. And so we thought of Sid.
And finally, to round things off, David Taylor, here's a question that could have been right up your street, but probably wasn't. Who pedalled the lot when no one would get on his bike?
Pedalled. Oh, this is the world's cleverest man, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Professor Sinclair, who's so clever indeed, that he invented the world's first pocket bath chair. Powered by two small pen-like batteries.
I thought you were going to say powered by two small boys.
But he was
inventing the Industrial Revolution.
More power to their elbows. Yes, that is the one. That is the C5. It was dubbed.
That's right.
But it wasn't a great success. It kept getting run over by hedgehogs. And poor old Sir Clive has then had worse troubles to come when his computer making wing didn't do terribly well and was the subject of a bid from a man called Mr. Sugar.
Maxwell.
No,
Sugar. Mr. Sugar offered him a lump sum for his computer empire, which has now reemerged as Amstrad or Amtrak or George Computers or something. But that's it. It's poor old Sinclair had rather a bleak 1986.
Yes, poor Sir Clive Sinclair, absolutely right. Of course, originally he tried selling the thing to the Gillette Company on the grounds that you won't get a closer shave than driving a C5 in heavy traffic. I'm afraid that brings the first part of our news quiz of the year to a close, but before we go, I'd like to ask Richard Ingrams for something that caught his fancy in 1986.
Something from Eastbourne, Barry.
Good.
Says, a second teenager has been given a custodial sentence for her part in a series of shoplifting offences. 17-year-old Rosalind Dawn Green also admitted causing criminal damage to a prawn sandwich.
So, John?
The colour of the paper suggests to me it's probably pink. It must be the Independent.
Perhaps it's just a copy of the Independent.
Read it out.
Someone's dipped in pink dye.
Here. Read it out.
I'll read it out now. Okay, here it goes. It's a story about Elizabeth Welsh, who seems to be a singer. And it says, she tells of her big hit Solomon from the 1933 show Nymph Errant, in which she remembers Gertrude Lawrence stretched out on top of a large poof. Unfortunately, it doesn't give the identity of the large...
You don't have to draw
pictures.
Will that
do? Will that do?
It will do very well, very well, thank you. Bill, what have you got for us?
I saw a saying of the week, I think, in Today, and it was from a... extremely pretty American actress who said, I have decided to donate my body to the Harvard Medical School, but unfortunately most of the doctors want it now.
I like it a lot. David.
One from the London Standard, which says, Ringo Starr's son, Jason Starkey, was fined £125 today after a drunken exploit during which he smashed a car window and helped himself to a stereo unit. His solicitor told magistrates that unemployed Jason was trying to break into the music business.
And at the end of part one of this epic contest, I am reliably informed that the final score is Richard and John 18, but Bill and David have won. They're 19 and are this week's winners. Well done. But do not despair. Do not despair, Richard and John. There's more to come. We'll be back with part two of the news quiz of the year next Saturday at 11 o'clock and again on Tuesday the 30th at 12:27 in the afternoon. I hope you'll join us then. Wishing you a Merry Christmas, we're going to leave you for now with a Swazi story, as seen in the Daily Telegraph by Mr. G. Harrison Watts of Southampton.
Prince Fiwakwakwe has been dismissed from his post in charge of Swaziland's vital family planning operation to reduce the size of the population. Prince Fiwakwakwe's wife has just presented him with his 42nd child. Taking part in the news quiz of the year were Richard Ingrams, David Taylor, Bill Tidy and John Wells. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Martin. The programme was written and compiled by John Langdon with the producer, Harry Thompson.